This episode of Shakesplorers is brought to you by Deuter, who've been making technical hiking, backpacking, snow sport, bike, and travel packs German-engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation. They're also a leader of sustainability in the outdoor industry because they build their packs to summit mountains, not landfills. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We'll learn more about Deuter's stress-free line of travel bags called Avion. Learn more by heading to deuter.com. That's deuter.com. This episode of She Explorers is also brought to you by Merrill. Merrill exists to give you all you need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. They believe the trail is for everybody and everybody. Merrill's goal is to provide thoughtfully designed, rigorously tested products that over-deliver on performance, versatility, and durability. Because when you've got air in your lungs and good shoes on your feet, you've got everything you need. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We'll talk with Jenny Brusso, founder of Unlikely Hikers, about how Merrill has supported her mission. Learn more at Merrill.com. That's M-E-R-R-E-L-L.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
There was never a time when I was in the cave that I was like, oh, I wish I could clean the kitchen, or I should really meal plan, or oh, my desk is a mess, or I was going to send some emails and like research some other stuff, and oh yeah, and maybe take Riley out for a walk. To be able to just only focus on the thing I was doing and not have other things that I could potentially be doing was really, really, really wonderful, because I always have 18 things I could be doing.
This is Kat Greaser. A couple of months ago, Kat emailed me about a caving trip she had coming up in the Scapegoat Wilderness in Montana. She listens to this podcast while she's at the gym.
I look forward to going to the gym so I can hear other stories of women in the outdoors.
So we talk a lot about backpacking, hiking, trail running, and camping on the show. Sometimes climbing and water sports make their way in too. But Kat pointed out that we haven't really covered caving, save an episode about Oregon Caves National Monument with Corin Bishop a couple years back. Kat loves caving, and she reached out for a simple reason. She wants more women to try it.
Caving is a thing that if you can hike and you're okay with potentially small spaces, then you can cave. Across the entire country and the world, there's so many different caving clubs or grottos. I would love to see all of them have an influx of people and more people caving, because it's so much fun and there's so many different things you can do. You can do vertical caving on rope. You can do horizontal caving where it's mostly walking. There's lots of caves that are crawling, and there's cave diving, which I don't do, but I know people who do. And there's potential to find new cave and map caves and or just go and explore known caves.
You can tell Kat loves it, right? I can hear it in her voice. My hope in this episode is that we can get a sense of the why behind her passion for the sport. We'll also get to learn about Kat, follow along on her summer caving trip surveying the Scapegoat's cave system, and get a taste of a very unique way to spend time outside. When you were younger, would you have seen yourself doing something like caving?
Oh, absolutely not. I grew up a dancer. I've danced my whole life. Because of that, I've always been very cautious. I've always loved the outdoors. My dad was Coast Guard, so I've always lived next to the ocean. So I've always had an appreciation for that beauty and loving to be at the beach. And my first memories are from living in Kodiak in Alaska. So I've always had an appreciation for mountains and I've always loved them, but it really wasn't until I met Daryl that I started doing anything outside.
Daryl is Kat's husband. Riley, who you might hear about later, is Kat's dog.
I didn't learn to ski until I was 22 or 23. I never really started hiking until I was early 20s. I was very cautious because as a dancer, your body is your instrument, and so if you get hurt, then you can't use it. That always put a hesitation on how much I was willing to put my body out there, because if I get injured, that could be the end of my career.
This isn't an unfamiliar feeling for me either. I was a runner when I was young, and since it was my main focus, the risk of injury just didn't feel worth it. Personally, I'm glad there's more room in my life now. Daryl introduced Kat to caving, too. It's not unusual to have someone close to you show you the ropes. When Kat first reached out, she told me cavers can be secretive. Which, when I think about the nature of the sport, lighting up the darkness with your headlamp, squeezing your body through tunnels, and linking together passageways, it's not too surprising. I wonder whether Kat was nervous before her first trip.
The first time I went caving was at Ape Cave, which is here in Washington, down by Mount St. Helens. And I was nervous because I had never done anything like caving before. I kind of didn't know what to expect. And I remember... like a couple times when we were in the cave, and Ape Cave is a lava tube. So it's like a big subway tunnel tube that was created when Mount St. Helens erupted at some point in the past. But I remember at one point having to like remind myself that the ceiling wasn't going to crumble on me. Like the whole thing wasn't going to suddenly like get small and fall and crumble and trap us. Because it's been there for hundreds of years, and that rock is really stable, and hundreds of people go through Ape Cave a year. So I had to just like keep reminding myself that, no, it is safe. This is a safe thing to do. I'm not gonna die in this cave. And then once I was able to like remind my nervous system of that, then I was fine.
Once she broke through that feeling, Kat just had fun. Her curiosity was piqued, and since there are lots of different kinds of caves and ways to explore them, 2011 was just the beginning. This summer was Kat's fourth trip to Scapegoat with the Northern Rocky Mountain Grotto. Before she left, she did something she'd been meaning to do for a while. What was happening in your life before your most recent trip to Montana?
Oof. I was definitely going through a transitional period in work. I am a stage manager and a lighting designer, and then also at the time a barista. And so I was in rehearsals until 10 or 11 at night. And then I would come home and sleep and then wake up at 4:30 and go to work. And then come home and take a nap and then get up and go to work at the theater. And it was just, I couldn't do anything except for work and sleep. So I've been in a transitional period where I've known that I needed to stop working coffee if I wanted to be able to pursue theater more and then also have time to do other things that make my soul happy, like be outside. It was a lot of figuring out how to make that happen. And it was like a 2 or 3 month lead in to me quitting my coffee job. My last day at my coffee job was like a week and a half before we left for Montana.
That big life change came at a good time. And you know that feeling after completing final exams, say, or putting in your notice or waking up with a whole empty day in front of you? Heading out of Seattle for the caving trip, Kat felt free.
It is 5:49, and we are officially driving away from our neighborhood in Seattle to get on I-5 and then get on I-90 for 472 miles. Missoula bound!
Kat and her husband were joining up with members at the Northern Rocky Mountain Grotto to spend a week camped a mile from the cave.
So the caves we're currently working on are on this cliff face, and then there's a plateau above it, and there are thousands of pits on the plateau. Some of them may join into the system we're on. Some of them may be caves in their own right. Some of them may just be like tiny pits that don't go anywhere, are just like 10 feet or whatever. So the idea of being able to find new cave or to find the passage that connects us in to other known parts of the cave is just so exciting.
A big part of what excites Kat about caving is the feeling of walking and crawling and climbing through a place that doesn't have a lot, if any, documented walking and crawling and climbing. She tells me that it's exciting to help survey and tell the stories of caves where maps don't exist yet, or where roots have been lost. In the 8 years since Kat started caving, she's developed more skills, and her time out there is more goal-based than it used to be.
We had three main goals for this trip. The first was to map the connection passage so that we could officially call it the Scapegoat System. So the through trip we made a couple years ago connected the two caves, but we didn't have any documentation. Like, we had photo documentation, but we didn't have it on the map yet. So goal one was to map that connection passage. Goal two was to push a water lead in Kathy's icebox. And then we also had the goal of getting into a couple other cliffside caves that are, I think the entrances are about 500 feet further south on the cliff face. And those caves haven't been accessed since the 70s. So that was our third goal.
We are packing up. We have, I think, 5 horses with gear on it and 15 people. Daryl, my handsome husband, hiked in already. And then I'm going to take up the rear probably with Riley, our puppy. And yeah, gonna go hiking today. I think we're gonna do about 13 miles, but we'll see.
It's a 13-mile hike from the trailhead to where they would set up camp for the week. The horses are to carry the heavier gear necessary for the kind of caving they're doing. Kat did assure me that it's not a big gear investment to get started hiking lava tubes like Ape Cave, though.
You don't need a ton of specialized gear to do beginning caving. To see if you like it, you don't need to go out and buy a bunch of stuff. You really just need knee pads, gloves, helmet, headlamp.
Okay, back to the Scapegoat Wilderness area. Kat's just about to get to camp.
We're on the last push to camp. We're to the part of the hike where, when you're not in the trees, you can see the cave, which in some ways makes this easier. In some ways makes it harder, because I can see where it is I'm going, but it's just so far away. But oh my gosh, it's just so incredible out here. The walls of rock are amazing.
Once they arrive and set up camp, every day that week takes on a familiar rhythm.
Basically, every morning we would get up, and while we were drinking coffee and eating breakfast, we would figure out who was going on which trip. And then we usually had 3 different groups. One group would leave, and then the next group would leave, and then the next group would leave. And sometimes we'd meet up all at the cave again, and other times we wouldn't see each other again until the end of the night. And then when we got back to camp, we would talk about what we did and then kind of decide what we wanted to do the next day, decide if anyone was going to stay at camp or if we were going to send people up to the plateau. We didn't want people to only see the same section of cave for the whole trip. So we were encouraging people to move groups every couple days or so.
What happens in between camp, in the caves, after this? Deuter has been making technical hiking, backpacking, snow sport, bike, and travel packs German-engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation. I'm here with Laura Hughes, host of our sister show, Women on the Road, who shared with me a travel pain point that Deuter has eased with their travel line.
Gail, one thing that is really challenging for me when I'm flying that I actually get stressed out about is wondering if my carry-on bag is going to fit in the overhead compartments or under my seat.
Ooh, yeah, that's a big problem for me too. This is such a delicate balance, fitting all the gear you need and meeting airline specifications for carry-ons, especially if you're not planning on checking a bag.
I was really happy to be able to try out some of Deuter's new bags that they have. It's their whole travel series called Aviant.
Ooh, tell me more about them.
Yeah, it's nice because they still have the same type of technical specs as a lot of the Deuter backpacking and hiking bags that we're familiar with, but they're geared towards travel, so they're a lot more streamlined, but they still do have a lot of other compartments, so there's tons of storage, and they're super comfortable and meant to carry a lot, but also compact enough that you're not going to be sweating it out, getting on your flight, wondering if wherever you're traveling to, your bags are actually going to be able to go with you or not.
Deuter's Aviant line comes as a carry-on, a duffel, and the Access Pro, which is a hybrid backpack suitcase for international travelers. All keep you organized, comfortable, and confident when you're on the go. Learn more at deuter.com. That's deuter.com. This episode is also brought to you by Merrill, who exists to give you all you need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. They believe the trail is for everybody and everybody, and that truly shows up in the small businesses, nonprofits, and influencers they support. Speaking of, I talked with Jenny Brusso, founder of Unlikely Hikers, about the impact partnering with Merrill has had in her work.
Merrill has been a huge support to me as an adventurer and to Unlikely Hikers, my hiking group and social media platform. They support my group hikes, which I lead twice a month, one in Portland, Oregon, and one somewhere else nationwide. The amount of connecting I get to do with actual people all over the country who are interested in hiking with Unlikely Hikers is almost completely due to Merrill. And I'm so appreciative of that. I feel like they never ask me to be any other way than myself and are very supportive of what I'm trying to do. And they're not trying to tidy up my image. And like, I think they really see and understand what I'm trying to do. And just, they trust me to do what I'm already doing well. And I'm really grateful for that.
You can learn more by heading to Merrill.com. That's Merrill.com. We're back in the Scapegoats Wilderness area of Montana with Kat.
It was awesome. It was a great first day in the cave. Super stoked to get back to the cave tomorrow. Also very excited about the fire that was waiting for us when we got back to camp. Yes, holla. And the beer I'm going to drink as soon as I get back down to the fire. Right now I'm in the tent with my cute Mr. Pupper, who was such a good boy. He was just waiting for us when we got out of the cave, like such a good Mr. Boy. And yeah, I'm stoked about tomorrow.
Going into our conversation, I thought I knew what it might sound like in a cave.
Sometimes it's totally silent. If you're in a part of the cave that doesn't have water in it, then it's really one of the most quiet places you may ever be.
I imagine slow drips and a hello echoing off the walls. But just like there's a lot of different caves and lots of different ways to cave, there's a whole lot of variety in what you might hear in there too.
You might hear wind moving through. There's also times where you may hear water dripping from the ceiling or a stalactite on the ceiling that's dripping down. Or you might hear, you hear the water fall, but then you also hear the echo of it. So then it gets really loud and churny, and you can't hear people you're standing right next to. There's a cave in Idaho that we go to that has a lot of water in it sometimes, and you have to basically scream at the person or yell at the person next to you for them to sort of maybe hear you, because it's so loud and echoey with the water, and then like the rock is so echoey. So sometimes it's like that. This trip, I didn't go in a ton of loud passage. It was mostly just like really quiet, but also echoey. So if you were talking, like we were doing a lot of surveying, so I was having to like holler really loudly. So the person, the third person in our group who was two stations behind, could hear me, because the cave just like swallows sound. So sometimes it's echoey, but sometimes it's also because of the mud. It just like sucks all of the sound out. So you can't hear people, even if you're not that far away.
Here's Kat in the cave surveying the Northwest Passage.
Okay, and Elrod is gonna be. Let me turn around real quick. Left 15. No, left 12, sorry.
All good.
Right 5. Up 4. And down is breakdown, but 4. Okay, and I'm gonna pack this recorder back up and then find the next station.
Similar to sounds, there are a lot of different ways you can use your body. Perfect for a dancer.
So it's really a full body workout. Scapegoat, there's a lot of walking passage, so there's not a ton of crawling, which is nice. Caves in the southeast, there's a lot more crawling, but there's tons of stuff to crawl over. So there's a little bit of almost like bouldering where you have to like get up and over giant boulders, but with gloves that for me never fit because I have tiny hands, and so I don't always have the best dexterity, but like you have gloves on and you have like wellies or hiking boots on, but you're like climbing up and over boulders. And then there's drops where you have to use your vertical gear. Oh, I use a rack, a micro rack, to rappel. And then sometimes we have to, obviously then you have to climb up. And there's times where there's traverses where you're clipped into the rope and then like walking on tiny edges of rock that are next to giant pits, sometimes that are filled with water, sometimes not. And there are times when you have to like chimney up things or stem across giant pits that you're trying not to fall into to get down the passage. There's this one passage that we went through that's a bypass. You can just like walk through this like giant puddle that you kind of have to like stoop. So you're kind of like halfway stooped and walking through water up to about your knees to like duck down and under into this other room. Or you can do the bypass, which the bypass, you climb up a rope and then you get off rope. And then you have to like turn sideways and kind of like squeeze down. I think I talked about it in one of the recordings I did on the trip.
Here's Kat in the cave again, talking to a fellow caver.
We re-rigged the hand line traverse across those pits.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I can do it, but I definitely don't like to do it without the hand line. And as it was, that first one where you have to stem across and then step back, even though I've done that so many times, I had a moment where I had to like remind myself that it's okay, I can do this, I'm attached to the rope, I can do this, I've done it before. It's like my requisite like first time in a cave in a while, like mini freak out.
Yeah.
But it's nice that I got out of the way early because like just now doing the dead bat bypass, I forgot how tight it was.
and my crawl got stuck, and so there was like 2 minutes while I was waiting for Kai to get up to maybe give me a hand where I was just like unable to move. But I didn't freak out because I knew I'd be fine, which for me is like vast improvement.
So there's times where you have to squeeze. There's definitely times where I need other people there to help me either climb up, like give me a boost, or like let me stand on their shoulders or on their back to get down. Because they're, we call them nuisance drops. They're not big enough or long enough to need a rope to like use your vertical gear. But at 5'4", there are bigger drops than I can do by myself. So I definitely utilize my other cavers as steps from time to time, which I think is one of the reasons I love caving is because it is a team sport, if you will. Like, you have to be willing to help the other people on your trip because they're going to need help from time to time and you're going to need help from time to time. So it really... there's no point in like feeling like, oh, I'm the best caver, I can do this by myself, or oh, I'm not a good caver, I always need help, because everyone always needs help. I love seeing the camaraderie that comes together in a cave to get people through the cave. Like, if somebody's having trouble, you help them, and then you get to go further in the cave. Like, the little hiccups become moments to like become closer with your fellow cavers.
Another thing Kat loves is overcoming challenges.
When I'm really tired, when we're like at the furthest point into the cave, so like 6 or 8 hours into a cave, there's times where when I realize that I'm like bonking and I need to definitely eat food before we turn around and head back out, that I find myself like, oh my god, if somebody gets hurt, it's going to be 8 hours before anybody gets to the entrance to like utilize the EnReach or the PLB, and then we're 14 miles into the wilderness, and since we're in the wilderness, it's not like a helicopter can just like come and land and pick us up. And so like I have to stop myself from going down the mental train of, oh my god, it's going to be like 24 hours before anybody's going to get here to help us, which thankfully like is only ever a brief thought that I have. Mainly because I just remind myself that no one's going to get hurt. We're going to be fine. Like, I only am thinking this way because I am physically exhausted and need to eat some food and maybe need to do some jumping jacks to get my blood flowing again, because I could take a nap right now. So there's definitely the like moments of, I'm so exhausted, I can't imagine how it is I'm going to get out of this cave. But it's also, I don't know, there's something energizing about caving for me. It feels really good to push my body to its physical limits and like have all of my muscles moving and knowing that I'm going to use all of my muscles going in and coming out of the cave. So it's kind of like, I'm not a runner, so I don't really know what like a runner's high feels like, but there's a point where you push through, you get past the just like utter exhaustion and have what I assume a runner's high feels like. We mapped the connection passage and Brian's lead is going, and they mapped a good chunk of it and it's still going. So that'll be a goal for a future trip, is to continue to push that water lead. And then we got somebody was able to get to the entrance of one of the other two caves, Ramses and Campbell, that we were looking to get into, but we need to do some more planning on how to make it a little more sustainable to get in there. They had to drop a rope from the plateau, and it wasn't in the cleanest place. It wasn't a rope that multiple people could really climb up and down and have it stay safe and have the rope keep from rubbing. So we need a little more planning for future trips to figure out how to get into those two caves.
Going into this conversation, I wanted to get a sense of what draws Kat to caving. As we heard, it's experiencing a part of the landscape that many aren't able to. It's completing goals. It's moving her body. It's challenging herself. But as someone who's never caved, I still wondered whether there was one why to explain the drive. And as it turned out, it was kind of a silly thing to ask. So when you kind of go back and think about the caving and the goals that you had going into it, are the goals the big part of the why, or is it that feeling that you get? What do you think really drives you to want to cave?
Because it's fun. I think it's the exploration of it, especially like going out to scapegoat, it's like the entire experience of it. The exhaustion after the 13-mile hike in and the exploration in the cave, and like maybe we'll find new passage or going to a part of the cave I've not been to before. Just being able to be out there. Like the whole all of the pieces individual are wonderful, and I love each of the individual pieces of the trip, but like the whole package is just so awesome.
That whole package resulted in this feeling, one that many of us can relate to after a few hours or a day or a week outside. This is Kat as she's hiking out from the camp on the last day.
This whole trip has been really good for me, feeling strong. Empowering. It feels, I'm really proud of myself. It's really great that this is my fourth time out here, my third time really doing significant caving at Scapegoat. And it feels really good to like see that progress and know that I'm stronger physically and also a lot stronger mentally. It's really awesome being able to utilize the like anxiety coping mechanisms that I've been working on in therapy while in the outdoors, and having it kind of come second nature to do those things and not have to be like, oh, what do I do? Riley, wait up. Riley, wait.
Looking ahead, Kat's excited to build more outdoor time into her everyday.
So I'm excited to make being outside a priority, and how I know it's going to benefit the rest of my day-to-day life if I prioritize being outside for at least an hour every day, whether that's at the dog park or on a hike or just walking to the store instead of driving to the store. Being outside, whether I'm in the city or away from the city, always makes me feel better than if I'm just inside working at my computer or in rehearsal or even just doing things that I love to do, like cook. Like, I will feel better cooking if I've also spent an hour outside.
Thanks to Kat Greaser for reaching out and taking the time to talk with me. You can find her on Instagram at bizkata, so that's B-I-Z-K-A-T-T-A. I'll link it along with some caving resources in our show notes and on our episode landing page via she-explores.com. There you'll also be able to see some photos of Kat caving. Thanks to our sponsors, Merrill and Deuter. Learn more about She Explores by heading to our website, she-explores.com, and support the show by leaving a review wherever you listen. A great place to connect with me and other listeners of the show is in the She Explores podcast Facebook group. It's my favorite place to get in touch with all of you and to hear about what you're accomplishing in the outdoors. If you enjoyed this podcast, it'd be great if you shared it with a friend or wrote a review wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us and help us keep going. Music is by Lee Rosevere using a Creative Commons Attributions license, and music is also by Liam McNally. The show will be off next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. Until then, have fun out there.